We're on page 8 in the Choberet, which I'm going to do three sources at the top of the page. Right? Two are in Medrash Rabbah, and one is a Medrash cited in Torah Shlema. Find the original source of this Medrash. It's in a collection of Midrashim, but we'll see what we do with it. This is now, we are discussing the general picture of Chazal, Midrashim, about Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. A little bit about Sarif Garachalai also. We tend to be very protected, right? Whatever they do seems to be understood in as good a light as possible. We discussed in the previous class why that is so, right? But here, look at some of these realistic pictures and ironies that these three Midrashim draw. Let's read them inside and draw the appropriate conclusions. Let's start with the first one. It's a little weak in its copy, but it speaks about that when the brothers were sold Yosef to the Midyanim, right? After they sold him, it says they spayishchatu seirizim. They slaughtered a goat, and they dipped the coat that his father made for him into the blood of the goat, in order to take home to him to show him the coat and say, "You recognize this? This looks like Yosef's coat," in order to convince him that Yosef is dead. Right? That's the story of the dog. Right? This Medrash asks, why are we told what animal they slaughtered? Is that a legitimate question to ask in the Parshan? The Medrash? Okay. They wanted two things from this goat. They made it lunch. And they wanted to use blood. Or they could have punched someone in the nose and then like bleeding him from your nose all over the coat.
Kids are told that what looks most like human blood, goat is most similar.
Good. Good, okay. Well, she mentions that. So but here is what the premise of the Medrash is something that you find in Rashi's Perush, and certainly in other Midrash, is that whenever the Torah tells you more than you needed to know, right? Then a drash will fill it, explain why. The chiddush here, I'm going to tell you, is that Rashi, and a perush he claims is supposed to be pshat, sometimes indulges in it as well. So I'll give you just a quick example. When Avram sends his servant to find a wife for his son, that servant sees a girl at a well, right? And when she fulfills a deal he made with God, this private deal about watering him and his camels, yeah? He gives her 10 coins, he gives her 2 bracelets, and he gives her a ring. So Rashi writes that the 10 coins are a hint to the Aseret HaDibros, the 2 bracelets are a hint to the 2 Luchot, and the Becca is a hint to the Mishkan made for one God. Really, Rashi? That's the pshat? That he was telling you, if you come with me, a descendant of yours will deliver Aseret HaDibros, a Decalogue, on 2 tablets, and build a Mishkan to the one God? That's what it is? Why does Rashi write that? That a Medrash should write something, I can figure out maybe. But why does a Pashtan write that? Because Rashi also comes with the same premise, that this text told me more than I needed to know. If this servant was trying to tell her, listen, my master is loaded. It's more where this came from, if you come with me. Right? So what could the text have said? He gave her coins, he gave her gifts. Other than to tell me how many. Okay, you got it? So once it tells me how many, then Rashi will feel the impetus to explain what these numbers represent. He didn't make up those 3. It's not a big stretch, 10, 2, and 1. For goodness sakes, I think that's in the Echad Miyodea. Those are the guy who gets all 3 of them, right? Echad Elokeinu, Shnei Luchos Sabris, and Seres Adibros, Asara Dibraya. Okay? If they had said, he gave her 8 coins, Don't you think Rashi would have said eight coins, reminder that you're part of a nation that made a bris with God, that you give bris on the eighth day? It's just not the way of the Bible to write the number eight like that. You know, they round off to a round nice number 10. Okay? So, in our case, we might ask, why in a goat's blood? Just say, Vayishchatu behema. Right? Acknowledge the question? Okay? So let's see what the Medrash says. What is it about a goat? Okay. Now, this Medrash says, Vayishchatu Seir Izin. They slaughtered a goat. See the Rosh Tevos backwards? So what? What does it have to do with a goat?
See the goat skin, the hair.
That's what Yaakov used. He used the same animal to trick Yaakov, to trick Yitzchak. So don't you see what is the Torah trying to tell us by? I have no doubt that it actually was a goat. But what is the Torah trying to tell us by giving me that information? More than I needed to know. To tell me the irony. Yaakov, remember when you tricked someone using a goat? Look what's happening now and you don't even know it. He didn't know it was a goat's blood. He thought it was Yosef's blood. Okay? Okay, is it clear what the Medrash is doing? Now, this Medrash gets us started on a whole host of inyanim. Yaakov, that unfortunate day, look, what else could he do? He had something, did he express it to his mother that he's afraid of getting caught, he doesn't really want to do it. It's his mother that convinces him to do it. Right, when he says, but my father might curse me if he finds me, I don't even feel like Esav. How am I supposed to? He goes, let the curse be on me, just listen to me, I have a plan. She may have been preparing for this plan for a long time. Okay? For what kind of a good son has to search Bob in his favor, for instance, who's afraid of being cursed, so he doesn't want to do something lest he be cursed, says, okay, I'll do it, my mother will be cursed instead of me. Right? So Rishbam says, that's what she told him. Let me tell you why you have to do this. You're fulfilling what I heard when I was pregnant. Remember what God told her when she was pregnant? Rav, yeah, Ya'avod. In this sense, Sa'ir, the younger one will prevail. Yaakov, you're the younger one. You're a few minutes younger, but you're going to prevail, so you have to do this. So he was convinced, he did it. But there was a lot to pay afterwards for the rest of Sefer Bereishis. Don't you get it? In the very next story, he falls in love with a younger sister. And who does he end up marrying? He ends up marrying the older sister. What's interesting is that throughout the story, he talks about them, and the narrator talks this way, about the two girls being the Ketana and the Gedola. It's Rachel Bitfa Ketana. But when Yaakov confronts his father and says, Lama Rimi Sani, why did you deceive me? You knew who I was working for. Right? Lama Rimi Sani, why did you deceive me? Reminding us of what Yitzchak said. Right? Only what Lavan answers is, Lo ye'asekein b'mkomeinu l'seisat se'ira l'fnei ha'bechira. There he changes. It doesn't say l'seisat ketana l'fnei ha'gedola. Se'ira l'fnei ha'bechira. See it? We don't, in our place, give it, so he brings these charged words, right? Anochi Yisav Bechorecha. It's not Yisav, Yisav Gidolecha, your bigger son, your Bechor. Right? So Yaakov is reminded throughout this story, especially the way Laban gives him a shock. Do it in the dimensions. Lo Yosekin Bikomenu. You get it? In our place, we don't let a younger one get in front of the older one. Like in your place. I heard why you had to run away. I heard why they couldn't send a wife down the way they sent my sister down. You were escaping your brother, right? Which is why Laban thinks he can get away with it. Why wouldn't Yaakov just elope with her and go back home? You can't go back home. You might get killed. Laban knows where he has Yaakov. Right? But here's this amazing midrash that says, Yaakov, you know why the Torah tells us it was a goat? Because of what you did once with a goat. By the way, you know who gets in on this? Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim asks, why is it always Se'iri Zim Echad L'Chatos? Why is it always a goat that's a chatos? Why not any other animal? Now you know? Okay? You go with me? Now you know why it's a goat.
It's not a reason, it's
an atonement for Machiras Yosef. That they used the goat's blood to trick their father. And Yaakov also used the goat to trick. By the way, can you take this one step further? Who dipped it in blood? Who was the one who suggested to dip it in blood? Yes! What happened to him in the very next chapter with a goat? Remember the story where he gave up his staff and his signet ring?
Signet ring, yeah. Well, what does the goat have to do with it?
He was supposed to pay a goat to the woman he slept with. Remember that? She said, get me a series in.
Mark.
So you see, what Yaakov does with the goat, he gets Yosef's blood with the goat. And when Yehuda, the bad side on Yosef, now he's not tricked, but he's reminded of how ashamed he's supposed to feel using these two goats. There, it's two goats. Oh, no, I'm sorry, it's one goat. So Yaakov in turn was fooled with a goat. See, I wrote the words Mida Keneged Mida. The rabbis were very sharp about these kind of things. I want to introduce you to a name that appears on your front page. You see the select readings, Robert Alter, The Art of Biblical Narrative. You see that? I'm going to read his introduction at some point. It's on reserve upstairs. It's not to be today or tomorrow, but you can read his introduction preferably before the vacation for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is over. It's a short introduction. And he writes about the nature of biblical narrative in general. This is not a course in biblical narrative, but it'll help us understand some things about biblical characters. And in his introduction, he writes that the rabbis were not as sensitive to the nuances of biblical ironies and trends as I am. So what's the same? I'm making this chiddush of recognizing biblical trends. By the way, there's a book that just came out on biblical trends by a professor, David Sykes. It's really quite excellent. It was his doctoral thesis. It's really amazing on finding biblical ironies and biblical trends. But Robert Alter makes the claim that the Chazal, meaning Midrashim, Bereishis Rabbah, were not so sensitive on these nuances, these trends, these, right? I would accuse Robert Alter of not reading enough Midrashim. This pamphlet is filled with such Midrashim, right? Let's look at the one right below this. There's a 17 around it. It says, this is a midrash that appears in Bereishis Rabbah. When Yaakov leaves his father and his brother comes in to learn that the bracha that he was supposed to get is now taken by someone else. Right? So the pasuk that records his reaction is by Yitzhak. He cried out a great and bitter cry. Right? Is there a pasuk that you know, a famous pasuk, that sounds a little like that someplace else in the Tanakh?
paper?
Close. It's one of the Megillos.
Oh,
yes. Yes. When Mordechai learned of Haman's plan, it's almost the same pasuk, only instead of a tzadik, it's a zayin. A yizak instead of kol. Right? So, this medrash, Gracious Rabbah, takes note of something amazing. Take a look. After all, who is hurting whom in the Gracious? It's Yaakov hurting Esau, right? Who is hurting whom in the Megillah? It's Haman's decree, the reaction of Mordechai. Right? You see how it crosses over? Yeah. Haman is a direct descendant of Esau, while Mordechai is a direct descendant of Yaakov. Yaakov, I know you were listening to your mother and all this, again, but you still deceived your father and caused great pain to your brother. Look at the Lashon of the Medrash. Take a look. Source number 17. Mr. Vortzman, try to read it. Za'aka achat. Start from there, the middle of the line. Source 17. Za'aka achat, he's eat Yaakov.
It's kind of like not legible.
You know, that's actually that's a misprint. It's not by Yitzhak Zaka, it's by Yitzhak Zaka. I don't have to look it up. I don't know why I'm noticing now for the first time. That's a misprint. That's not what's written in the pasuk. It's by Yitzhak. But you know what? I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't. I shouldn't be so crazy as to just say it without looking it up. But, you have such a stark misprint. Yes, by Yitzhak. It's a misprint. In the second line, it should say by Yitzhak Tzibakov. The zeal of, I don't know if it was a mistake, the printer of this Mitzvah or the original Darshan. Right?
Where did you get this text from?
This is a. This is not a scholarly edition, I'm sure. I'm sure there's a footnote someplace that points this out. Alright, anyway, so it says afterwards, Vehecha Nifralo. Where was Yaakov paid back for this? As if though there must be payback. You can't trick someone like this without getting paid back. Now I would say the payback was when, what did the first medrash say? When was the payback? No. Nice. When was the payback for the when Yaakov did to Esau?
When Yaakov got tricked by Yosef.
Right, when Yaakov got tricked by Yosef with the goat. Right? But this medrash is concentrating on not on this series in, but on Vayitzak Tziokah. Where was the payback for the pain you caused Esav? Not on how you tricked. That you got to be on Yosef. Where did you get paid back from what Esav did?
Does he say that there was no pain by the Yosef?
Shushan Habir. No, but... But when the punishment of Yosef has nothing to do with the pain you caused Esav.
No.
The punishment of Yosef is how you did. Every part of what he did has some kind of punishment later.
So, in the first incident, you'll isolate the trickery and the pain attached to it. In the second incident, you'll put them both together, only to give the pain down by Shemavir. How does that make sense?
So it's not the pain, it's the irony of how this is written. You know, what can I say? They're going backwards, but you know. The irony is that when the author of Megillat Esther sees that a descendant of Esav is causing great consternation and pain in the descendant of Yaakov, he's saying, you know what, I'm going to write that down by space, just in a way that's going to make the ear of the reader tingle, to remind them of what's written in Parshas Vayikra. Okay? Let's go to 18. These are just three simple examples of how wrong Robert Alter is, because I can give 100. He said that the rabbis weren't sensitive to this kind of approach to the biblical character. He's wrong. Rabbis were very sensitive to this. Right? When Yaakov had four children with Leah, Rachel became very jealous and said, Yaakov, give me a child, if not, I die. Havali bonim b'mayim meisahami. Yaakov's response was, remember? He was angry with her, b'icharaf. And he said, Hatachas Elokim, Anochi Asher manami meich pribatim. Am I in the place of God that I have denied you a child? I'm not the one that's keeping you from having a child. Excuse me. I have God's fine. I have lots of children with your sister. Okay? If there's any problem with your infertility, it's not me, it's you. So do something. Don't look at me. What do you think of that response?
Unless there's something that Rachel was saying that caused her child, unless there's something bigger to the picture, it's not just you kids. You did this covenant, I guess now I'm going to do that.
That's what this manager says. Say Yaakov, but Yicharaf Yaakov Berochel. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kacho Nim Es Hamikos? This is how you talk to a woman who's in pain? You wouldn't talk to a woman on the street like that. How do you talk to your own wife that way? Hatachas Tukim Anoshi, Chayecho. Shebanecho asidim la'amod b'fnei b'no v'yemar atachas elokim ani. Wow. This is an old gracious Esther. This is right here in gracious. Yaakov says to Rachel, am I in the place of God who obviously has made you barren? Go to him to complain. Don't come to me. Really, Yaakov? That's the way a therapist would talk? That's the way a counselor, someone who's trying to soothe someone, that's how you talk to your wife? You know what? She will have a son. And you know what that son is going to say one day to your children you already have born? Because this is one of the saddest parts of Sefer Bereishis, guys. After Yaakov dies, the brothers say, oh, Louis is to maybe Yosef. Maybe Yosef still bears a grudge about what we did to him. They thought that Yosef would want to kill them. So they go to Yosef and they say, our father begged us not to kill us because we sold him. That's an outright lie. Yaakov, A, probably never knew that Yosef was sold by them. B, even if Yaakov did know, it's doubtful that he would accuse Yosef of wanting to kill them for it. And C, even if Yaakov did know and thought that after he's no longer here, he thinks Yosef will kill them for what they did, would it make more sense for Yaakov to go directly to Yosef to say that? And not tell the brothers to tell him that? Come on. So what did Yosef respond when they said this? He said, Hatachas Elokim ani? Using the same words. Right? So the Medrash says, be careful. Anything you say that has negativity in it is going to come back to you. Now, we generally don't have Midrashim written about things we do. It doesn't have to be a Midrash. It's going to happen to you. That's life. Everything is mita keneged mita. You just have to be aware of the ironies. Okay? So were Chazal sensitive to these subtle textual hints?
Does he say in a vacuum Chazal wasn't sensitive to them, or is it specifically certain Chazal in some areas?
No, he just says in general. He says in general. I don't think he read enough Midrashim. Look at this, you know, many other examples. Okay. Now, look, when the rabbis found things wrong with Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, they had a purpose. There was always a purpose behind the message. It wasn't just to say, oh, look, Yaakov made a big mistake. The same is true when we find things that's worthwhile in what they did. That's the vast majority of the Midrashim. Learn from this beautiful behavior of Yaakov. But when Yaakov meets Esav, source number 20, and he presents to Esav his 12 children, who's missing?
No.
His 13 children. Yaakov was born, so it's him. A girl is missing. He presents 11 children. Yaakov is born.
Dina
is missing. So the Midrash says, where was Dina? This one Rashi mentions. Did you hear what Dina was?
Yeah.
What? Do you ever hear what Dina would do?
Yeah.
No, do you have a heap where she was? Why
was
she
in that?
That's later. She was in a box. Right? He had her hidden. Dina Hechan Haya Paisa. He need not the tape up and the out of front. She was in a box, hidden. Why? Asa Barasha is a ano Ramai Shalom it's letting of Yireo Tobi Kacho Tobi Men. Right? I don't want Esav to have a desire for Dina. Dina's much younger than Esav, right? I don't want Esav to have his eye on people that used to marry the nieces. But you marry the niece of a much older brother. This is my younger brother. I don't want to have an interest in this daughter. But alright, otherwise, why isn't Dina mentioned? Happens all the time in Rashi's parish. Something isn't mentioned, and Rashi just assumes it's not there. And Avram doesn't bring out bread, it must be that something happened to the bread. Right? Pesuel isn't mentioned in the final negotiations of Rivka's marriage to Yitzchok, he must not be there. Okay? So where was Dina? She was in the box. Now the Medrash is very sharp here, because yes, you're right. What the story right after this is where Dina is taken by Shechem. How does that story begin? By Tetze Dina. Where did she leave from? What do you have to say about Tetze? Where did she go? Where was she? She left from a box. What was Yaakov doing with Dina all that time? Hiding her, keeping her insulated from everything that's out there. Right? You with me? But you know, that may succeed if you can keep her in the box her whole life. But as soon as she leaves her box, be careful. Who knows where that can lead. Right? So, there's a lesson here. The rabbis were upset with Yaakov for hiding in Dina. Maybe your brother could have married her. Maybe she would have turned him around. A good wife, who knows what that can do. So, the person who wrote this medrash maybe wanting to tell us a thing or two about how careful we should be with our children and trying to protect them. And, right? Your success as parents, young men, will be much more how you teach your children to deal with the adversities of life rather than to try to shield them from all adversities of life. Okay? Got that? So Yaakov thinks the best way to keep Dina from all the struggles that I've had in my life is to keep her in a box. Apparently, certainly then, and maybe some people now think that girls need more protection like that than the boys. After all, he showed his boys off to Esav. Alright, but he wasn't worried that Esav would do anything with them. He was worried that Esav might take my daughter. Right? So the what goes into these midrashim when learning about biblical personalities is a lot of background. And now we're going to start to make a segue into some of the different backgrounds between Ashkenazim and Sfardim. Right? We're going to start with Ashkenazim. Ashkenazim that we're going to be studying is going to be basically three: Rashi, Rashbam, Bechor Shor. It's a little of Yosef Karo. Rashi, Rashbam, Bechor Shor. Bechor Shor was the next generation. He's known as Yosef of Orleans. Yosef of Orleans. He's quoted in Tosfos quite often. The quote is called Bechor Shor because it says Yosef, you know, in the Bracha of Moshe, in Parshas Vayetzi, Yosef Bracha, Yosef is called Bechor Shoro Hagadlo. So his book was called Bechor Shor. Look what I wrote on page 9. Please turn. Our perception of biblical characters, especially Avos and Imahos, is shaped first and foremost by Chazal, especially from Bereishis Rabbah. However, now that Midrashim are not used to such a great extent, Ladavonenu, our perceptions are shaped by the Midrashim Rashi chose to record. You know that in Midrash Rabbah there are a number of reasons given for why the rocks under Yaakov's head went from being many to being just one. But you probably only know one of those explanations because that's the one that Rashi brings down. I give many examples of this. Where Medrash gives no less than 12 different explanations of why God appeared to Moshe in a burning thorn bush. And Rashi brings down one of them. It's a great exercise to see why Rashi chose that one out of 12. And you see, you can whittle down each one and why it's not a good pshat and why Rashi chose the one he chose. It's a great, great exercise. Okay? So what we're going to do now is, you see what it says, Tzafon Tzarfat on the side there, it says Northern France. So that's Rashi Rishbam B'choshor. And now, so you could, let's try to build a trend based on the five Rashis that appear on this page. Okay, you all have it? We're going to read these five Rashis. Okay, what trend appears in this page? Right? It says, by Yira of Haaretz, there was a famine in the land when Abraham reached Canaan. There was a famine waiting for him. Ra'usa Haaretz Levado, Lenasoto, Im Yahar Her Achad Barak Shalom Kodesh Baruch. There was a famine waiting for him. After all, God just told him to take this long trip from Mesopotamia down to Canaan. And when Abraham gets there, there's a famine. What's with that, God? It was a test. Will he question God? Tell me to go to the land, and then what beats me first? Death and hunger. Is that your point, God? Is that the plan for me? What does Abraham do? Go down to Mitzrayim. Did he pass or fail that test? Rashi says that the whole famine was a test. So what do you think?
Failed.
That's how Rabban says. Rashi says he passed. Read the words. Why did he pass? Because look, lo here, hair. He did not complain. See, in Yahar hair, Achar Farosh, and the Torah. Will he complain to God and say, God, what are you all about? You asked me to leave my place of residence, leave my father, leave my home, and then you tell me to go to a place where there's death and famine? Why would you do that? All right, you must want me to leave. I'll leave. I'll come back. All right? And what happens in that other place, Abraham gets some kind of affliction there. His wife is taken. Hara was afflicted there, but Abraham gets to go free with a lot of gifts. Sounds like it's Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Right? It's a harbinger. But according to this Rashi, Abraham passed this test. Ramban says he failed the test by leaving.
It boils down to expectations. Did you expect him to stay there? Or did you expect him to just not complain?
Could you be so much on the nation? That's totally the case. It's a question of expectations. Ramban, who says that the Yitzhak Mitzrayim happened because of Abraham's journey there in chapter 12, the whole Egyptian experience, obviously he says that there's something wrong with that. Rashi says that Yitzhak Mitzrayim was a whole different explanation, a whole different reason, maybe for Bechiyos Yosef. Punishment for Bechiyos Yosef. That's too much punishment for just going down in time of famine. You go 2 weeks without any food and tell me how it feels. Right? Right? Now, when God told Abraham in chapter 15, you're going to be a great nation, Abraham asks a very chutzpahic question. B'ma eida ki irashena? How do I know that I'll deserve this? How do I know this? That's chutzpah. Because I just told you, Abraham, what are you talking about? Right? So Rashi interprets in source number 25 that Abraham was not asking a chutzpahic question because it says, ve'echashvei lo litzdaka. Abraham wasn't saying, how do I know you'll do these things for me? Show me a sign. No. Abraham had full faith that God was going to do that for him. Abraham was asking, how do I know I'll deserve it? What if my descendants don't worship you? What if my descendants don't obey your commands? What if my descendants don't give the bris? Don't keep your bris? Right? Will I still get what you're telling me? That's not such chutzpah. Okay. Do you remember we did a medrash that Yitzchak was blamed for favoring Esau? Is that a reason for favoring a child because he puts food in your mouth? Right.
So is that just a Bible reason?
You're bribed. What does bribery do to you? The Torah says it makes you blind. So Yitzchak was blind. He's okay, Yitzchak, but Tichene not Neiros. To the point that he would want to give the bracha to Esau. Right? So Yitzchak is found to be at fault for that. Or is actually a medrash coming up soon, medrash Hagadol, that Yitzchak was bribed because he was spoiled. Yitzchak was a spoiled character. Why? He had all the trappings of a spoiled person. Elderly parents, only child, parents waiting a long time for him to be born, surely spoiled by his mother, right? So that he could, if he liked certain foods, he could be bought by those foods. Wow. What a chutzpah to say such a thing. That's what you find in Medrash HaGadol about Yitzchak, because he was a mufunak for certain foods that his mother gave him when he was growing up. That to get those same foods, he gave favoritism to Esav that he should never have given. Rashi, in source number 26, disagrees with all that. He says, yeah, Yitzchak was not fooled by Esav, but because if he wanted food, he was fooled by Esav because Esav was a smooth talker. Right? Tzayin b'fiv doesn't mean he put food in Yitzchak's mouth. Esav was a tzayin b'fiv, you get it? He was a hunter with his mouth. Right? That's what Rashi says on 26. Yitzchak is not to be faulted for favoring Esav, even though in the Medrash he was. And Yaakov is not to be faulted for lying to his father. Wow. Yaakov is opening three words to his father of the beast. Anochi, Esav, Bechorecha. That's not a lie. I am Esav, your firstborn. So Rashi says that he's saying, Anochi, I am who I am, Esav Bechorecha. Do you read the talk? Do you read the name? Do you know the name? Anochi, Esav Bechorecha, right? Ashta, Muna, Asav, Yitzchak. That's wrong. It shouldn't be the truck. If you would translate this into English, where does the comma go? After the word Anochi or after the word Esav?
After Rashi. What? If you were saying you could translate like this?
In English. I am Esav, your firstborn. What is
that? I am Esav,
your firstborn, right? It should have been like this. Anochi Esav. Stop. Bechorecha. Not Anochi, which is a mafsik. Esav Bechorecha, I'm Yaakov. Esav is your Bechor. So that's what Rashi says, is to keep Yaakov from lying. There's a word on the face of the purpose, now I'm right lying. It's cheap. But don't you see the Rashi, you see the trend that I just gave with these five Rashis, I gave you 100. Rashi is very concerned, very adept at explaining the Avos' action in as good a light as possible. Why? We discussed that, I think, on our first class. Having to do with disputations, letters to Christians, and the general Northern French approach to the Bible, which was very much more traditional. Right? Abba Dalai is traditional. Gracious Rabba accepted the guilt on some of these examples. So here's a general picture. The Chazal, meaning the Midrash and the Gemaras, were much more critical of Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov than Rashi was. Right? That explanation is given by David Gerber also, which is on your front page. Right? The week-by-week thing that we're doing here, you see? On morality of the patriarchs and Jewish polemic and exegesis. Okay, Adkan Rashi, let's turn to Rashbam. You'll see that Rashbam is even... Oh my goodness. Well, look what I gave you on, all on page 10.
These are all Rashbams?
No, these are all Rashis. All Rashi's that, page 10, these are all Rashi's that absolve Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov of any guilt, even in some instances where the Midrashim acknowledge that there's something wrong with him. Rashi goes out of his way to clear up anything that Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov did.
It's interesting that Rashi is usually credited with an Enos shot on the drushing as well as going out this way to twist it. Does he do this elsewhere as well?
Rashi's not the most shot.
Rashi has certain rules that seem to be violated more in the, you know, it's kept in the breach that he doesn't, you know, veers off of shot. But it depends on the reader. Some good commentaries of Rashi say Rashi is shot only one every 1,000 times. Right? Some say that Rashi is pshat unless he says that he's drash. Some say he's drash unless he says that he's pshat. But the way Rashi himself reads like a biblical text depends who's reading it. Right? Okay. I'm not going to go through all of these, but everything on page 10 follows the same trend. Page 11 is Rashbam. Rashbam, I write, is more polemical than Rashi. You see the names Kamin and Tuito? Nebuchadnezzar Tuito just passed away last year, but I studied with him over 30 years ago. A great biblical scholar. His main study was of Rashbam. And Tuito thinks that Rashbam, one of Rashbam's main purposes in writing his Perush, was to write against Christian polemics, to write against Christian understandings of the Torah, to equip his readers with the ability to respond to Christian philosophies. Right? It's very difficult to prove this conclusively because it was very dangerous, as you can imagine, for biblical commentaries to actually write in their papers or even hint overtly that my papers is against Christian theology. It would get you killed at that time. So let's say a Christian theology is that when Moshe broke the Aseret HaDibros, right, he did so with Kavana as a harbinger to the broken covenant later in history. That we don't have to keep the Torah anymore. So how does Rashbam deal with that? By saying that when Moshe broke the Luchos, he broke them by accident. They fell out of his hands. He saw the Egel, he was so weakened, couldn't hold them anymore, and they just fell, and he had to push them so they wouldn't go on. It's not a shot, but it does respond to Christian theology. How can you say that Moshe broke the covenant by accident? Okay. Remember, I think I told you this last class. At that time, on a Shabbos morning, you had to spend an hour listening to your local priest giving you the sermon in shul on Shabbos morning, explaining why you should all convert to Christianity. In that framework, you know, some great commentaries had to put it to their parish why that's wrong, without ever letting people know that that's really what they're doing. Right? Okay. Kamin, you see the name Kamin, that's Sarah Kamin. It's her maiden name. Her married name is Yefet. Sarah Kamin wrote that she thinks that Rashi does that a lot too. Tuito objected. Tuito thinks that Rashi never polemicizes. Kamin thinks that Rashi is very often polemicizing, and I think the two of them are too extreme. I'll admit, I think I can find out, I can judge some Rashis in the Torah that Rashi clearly is saying something against Christian theology, right? But that he generally didn't care what Christians thought. If he thought this is what the Pasuk says, he'd say it. Even if it seems to feed into Christian theology. Okay. Rashbam will more vigorously defend actions of the others. Rashi will find a problem and solve it. Rashbam will show that no problem exists at all. Rashbam finds two sins, though, and they are noteworthy. Two times in the Lord's Sefer Bereishis does Rashbam admit that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov did something egregious. It's Avraham and Yaakov. Yitzchak is perfect. What did Avraham do wrong? For which he was punished with the Akedah. What a brilliant explanation of the philosophically difficult Behem Lokim Nisah as Avraham. What's philosophically difficult about that? If God knows all things, why does he have to test it? What do you mean God tested Avraham with Yitzchak? What do you have to do that? So our response is, no, you're making a mistake. That's not what Behem Lokim Nisah as Avraham means. It says Adish Hashem put him to the test. Hashem tortured him. Hashem punished him. Why did Hashem have to punish Abraham? What did he do just before the Akedah?
because it says Vayechar and Vayela, it must be something connected to what's before. Right before the Akedah.
Sure.
But there's a little story after that. It's the end of the reading of the first day of Rosh Hashanah. Is that he made a deal with the Klishi. He set the sheep. Not to have any fights or any altercations. So the Eretz Klishi is part of the land you're supposed to inherit. How are you doing this? And then the Midrashically, he made a deal with the Yavusi around Yerushalayim. What an irony that these are the two areas that today continue to be the parts of contention. Yehuda and Shomron, or more like Yehuda, and Azimut. Those are the two places that Avram gave up dibs. And Hashem says, Avram, what are you doing? How many of your descendants are going to die defending those areas? So you know what? It's so easy for you to give up a piece of Israel. Give up a piece of your family. Give me your son. It's so easy for you to give up land in Israel. Rishpam would probably be a friend in a right winger in Israel today. Okay. This is what he says in source number 37 on this page. It's irony that Rashi says that Yitzhak was 37 at the Akedah. Right, source number 37, where Rishpam says that Abraham was guilty of kissing up to the Philistines, and therefore he was punished with the Akedah. What Rishpam does in source number 38, and we'll close with this, is that he says that Yaakov is to be held blameworthy for so profusely bowing before Esav in Parshas Vayishlach. How dare you behave this way with him? Such abject behavior before the man that God says he'll protect you from him. Why are you doing this? So this is Rishpam, who lived in the 12th century. Ramban, lived 100 years later, went one step further than this. But I'm not in the Spanish parsha. Ramban was Spanish, but Ramban says that if God promised Yaakov, or promised Rivka, Virav Yaavod Sa'ir, the younger one, who ruled over the older one, and Yitzchak gave him a bracha, Yishtachavu L'cha B'nei Mecha, why is it that we have to bow to the Christians? Why do we have to bow to them? They should be bowing to us. So what did Ramban say? Yaakov gave it back. He was so afraid that Esav was going to kill him and his family at Parshas Vayishlach that he gave back the whole bracha to Esav. Who's bowing to whom? Who's the one who's the Gvir L'Achecha? Who's the one? I don't have Tal Shmai Mishmanei Oretz. That's real estate. I just have a lot of animals. That's not a Tal Shmaya nor Shmaya Oretz. I don't have Rota Bundesi Rosh. That's real estate. That's what you have. And besides, who's bowing to whom? So when Yaakov gives all that back to Esav, that's what we have to bow to the Christians, to Esav's descendants. That's what Rishpam and Ramban meant to me. All right? Okay, we're going to continue next time with Bechor Shor.